The commanding administrator leaned back in his chair and took a breath of air. He had just finished his log entry for the day. The three moons outside would soon be setting. It was already getting a bit dark. The bright light, which had poured previously through the window walls of the greenhouse a few hours before, now seemed dim and diffused. His mind was briefly overrun with a sense of panic and wondering, where could they be? Could something have happened to them? But in the interest of preserving his good mood, he forced the thoughts out of his mind. They still lingered, however. He didn't think of them directly, but somewhere in his subconscious he still worried. Could it be related to... could they have had something to do with it? One thought kept creeping up. He tried to fight it back, dismissing it as silly and juvenile, but it kept pushing. Could the creatures have gotten them? Commander! The administrator had been dozing off, dreaming fitfully of... Commander! The voice again. It came from outside the greenhouse. He didn't want to think about the dream. It had been too real, too actual. Not your average nightmare. Almost like a warning. The base was being attacked. People were screaming, running for their lives, abandoning their tools. Laser blasts could be heard. The creatures. It was the creatures. Commander! The voice yelled again, closer this time. Much to the administrator's relief, it managed to knock him back to reality. The voice sounded frail and desperate. Commander, we've got a real megaload of problems on our hands. He turned around to see his second-in-command, Trellin, stand in the doorway. The two of them had been friends since their academy days. Whenever Trellin started calling him Commander, which was his actual rank, instead of by his first name, he knew there had to be something terribly, terribly wrong. Trellin, what is it? Trellin just looked at him. He didn't have to do anything else. The blood soaking and the rupture in his stomach lining, cascading slowly down his legs onto the ground, the splatters on his forehead, the wild look in his eyes. Trellin, what's going on? Trellin whimpered. Harry, this is it. We're screwed. And then he collapsed. Trellin fell to the floor where he stood, dead. And just then, Commander Carey could hear the sounds surrounding the colony. People were screaming, running for their lives, abandoning their tools. Laser blasts could be heard. The creatures. It was the creatures. The dry heat was the first thing Roger noticed when he materialized onto the surface of Clorox II. Although the three moons, which the colonists had nicknamed Larry, Moe, and Curly, were setting, the temperature was still high. Despite this, a gust of wind blew steadily across the landscape, toying with Roger's hair as it flowed, carrying a lone tumbleweed to an unknown destination. One word sprang to mind as Roger looked at his surroundings. Desolate. He was standing on a ridge encircling the colony. Below, he could see a small canyon which nestled the colony structures. The canyon was almost perfectly circular, causing Roger to wonder whether it was artificially constructed or not. If it had, it had been impeccably crafted. The red sand, the red-hued cliffsides, just like the rest of the planet. The structures themselves consisted of several domestic buildings. A larger construction, which Roger assumed must be some kind of gathering or mess hall, and a greenhouse. He could spy several crop areas further to the north. A shuttle pad was also situated about 100 meters away from the greenhouse. But the whole place looked empty, unpopulated. In fact, the entire colony had an air of an abandonment about it. Blast marks adorned the colony structures, the greenhouse was in shambles, and the shuttle, which was supposed to be on the shuttle pad, was missing, having been replaced by a large scorch mark. Some meters away from Roger, an array of mining tools had been carelessly discarded as if their owners left in a hurry. Something about this place made a chill run down Roger's spine, despite the heat. It came as quite a surprise when Drool announced, "Maybe we should split up, Captain." "What?" said Roger, looking at his sub-corporal with mild astonishment. "We can cover more territory that way." "Don't you think we ought to stick together?" Roger asked.
"Only if you make a quick wardrobe change, sir," Drool said, looking at Roger's red uniform with a certain air of displeasement.
"Drool, this is not a time to play fashion critic."
"Well, it's just your uniform. It's so red, sir. It's bad luck."
Drool left no room for discussion.
"I'll meet you back on the ship."
Roger was seriously beginning to wonder what he'd gotten himself into now. But before he could formulate a protest, Drool had vanished.
Roger shrugged, sighed, and started walking toward the colony buildings. Most of the buildings, Roger soon found out, were boarded up. Those that weren't were protected with access codes, which Roger didn't have the slightest clue how to break. Not that he figured it would do much good. If the colonists were here, they wouldn't lock themselves up in a place they knew nobody could break into. Roger approached the large greenhouse. The walls were made up of several panes of glass, all of which had been covered with white sheets. One of these, at the side, had been torn apart, and the glass beyond it had been smashed, creating an improvised, if not somewhat destructive, entry. Cautiously, Roger stepped inside the greenhouse. Now that he looked at the place from the inside, the deliberate cruelty that had gone into making the doorway seemed mild by comparison. The arboretum was, quite simply, a shambles. Several glass panes on the wall were shattered, only covered by the flimsy piece of cloth. Plants, pots, and other assorted gardening materials had been strewn carelessly about the room. Large computer consoles, presumably for cataloging or researching, had been thrown out inattentively. Then Roger heard the noise. It sounded like something scurrying around the corners of the room. It gave Roger quite a shock at first, but then he reasoned he was being silly. The colony was obviously abandoned. It was probably just the eerie sensation that seemed to engulf this place that had played tricks on his mind. Maybe a space rodent or something. A slight, muffled humming noise attracted Roger's attention next. He strained to listen, to find out what it was and where it was coming from. The latter proved quite easy, as he quickly deduced that the sound was coming from this room. The first was also relatively easy, now that he discerned the noise. It sounded like a computer running. He located the device quite easily. It was a large, rectangular-shaped console, which stood in the center of the room. As Roger approached the computer, he noticed that the screen read, "Log Computer," and was asking for a 5-digit access code. Just as he was about to give a couple of random numbers a try, he heard another noise. This time, it was loud and was coming directly from behind him. Something was moving. He spun around just in time to see a large figure come flying towards him and whacking him across the face with both hands. Roger was sent flying a clear meter across the floor and landed on his back. The creature, whatever it was standing with his back towards the sun, making it impossible to see who or what it was. But it was agile, if nothing else. It skipped furiously towards Roger, fists clenched, eager to deliver some more punishment. Roger rolled on his back to his left as quickly as he could, narrowly avoiding the creature, who struck into the hard rock ground with his elbow. Roger formulated a quick plan. It wasn't a good one, but it was the best he could think of right now, when panic had seized him and every muscle in his body was twitching with paroxysm of terror. He would jump for his life, skip over the log computer, land on his feet, and bolt like hell for the door. Then he'd figure out what to do once he got outside. Maybe yell for Drool, or something, or try to find some safe place to hide. The creature had recovered and was rising to its feet. Roger sprinted, jumped up into the air, landed with one foot on top of the console, tried to put his other foot in front, but slammed into the edge of the console, lost balance, and fell right on his face. Roger didn't even have enough time to utter a curse. The creature picked him up off the console by the lapel and threw him in the corner. Roger landed uncomfortably in a pile of broken ceramic pots, which protested loudly by breaking even more. Roger wasn't used to this sort of physical punishment. He slid down and came to rest, lying flat on his back. The creature jumped over to Roger in a single leap. It bent over him and grabbed him by the lapel. Roger got his first good look at his attacker now. It was humanoid, but the face was horribly distorted and looked like it was in the early stages of melting. His arms, neck, and various other visible appendages followed the same description. The clothes he wore were blue, but tattered and ripped to the point of uselessness. To Roger's great surprise, the mutant spoke.
"Well, well, aren't you an ugly one?" it said.
Its voice sounded growling, sepulchral, almost as if he was speaking with the bottom of his throat, not his mouth. Roger found the remark quite contradictory.
"I was once ugly like you, but look at me now. Maybe I can make you pretty like me, hmm?"
This didn't sound too promising.
"Now, try and dodge my death loogies, monkey boy,"
the creature concluded menacingly, almost grinning with sadistic pleasure.
Roger could hear the saliva and slime gather in the mutant's throat, which was almost enough to make him retch. Not so much the thought that he was about to be spit on by a guy with a hemorrhoidal skin condition, but more what those loogies might do to him. Maybe I can make you pretty like me? The first spitball escaped the creature's lips, but Roger threw his head to one side. The glob of slime, which turned out to be a regurgitational shade of green, collapsed harmlessly onto the ground with a splat. The mutant only smiled, somehow finding this whole situation rather amusing, and began powering up for another. Roger had regained his loss of strength from the beating by means of pure adrenaline rush, and was now struggling like a gazelle caught in a lion's maw. Just as the creature attempted to spit out another completed spitball, Roger managed to release the mutant's grip and throw himself off to the right. The creature was stunned for a moment. Roger panicked to gain a standing position, hoping to resume his previous plan, bolt for the door. But the creature was too fast and managed to pin Roger down again, this time restraining both his arms in a firm grip. Roger was helpless this time. His struggles against the restrainment were weak and had obviously no effect, other than to strain his arm muscles above and beyond what is considered healthy, and he could barely move his head. The mutant horked extra loudly to build up a third and by far the most powerful spitball of doom. Roger closed his eyes, hoping that at least it would be somewhat painless. Any second now, he expected a wet glob of slime to hit his face and start seeping into his skin. But it never came. Even with his eyes closed, Roger could notice the bright flash that suddenly appeared. He opened his eyes, in time to see the mutant's grin evaporate in horror. His abdomen began to drip with ooze, red-colored ooze. His grip suddenly grew forceless. Roger took full advantage of the situation to stand up, jerking the mutant off of him and sending him lying back down onto the dusty ground. Roger got up and looked around to see who had saved him. Drool was standing in the doorway, holding his service discharger, casually blowing at the tip of the nozzle. Roger calmed. "Nice shooting, Tex," he said, still panting. "I thought I was a goner."
"Hey, he's a real looker," Drool remarked. "I'm going to go see if there's any more of these creatures I can blow away. I'll meet you back at the ship."
Roger nodded, too breathless to speak at the moment. Drool left. Roger turned his attention to the mutant, which, much to his surprise, was still breathing. He wasn't trying to go for Roger, though. His strength had left him. What he was doing was undergoing a strange form of transformation. The pus-filled disfigurement of the skin slowly disappeared until Roger found himself staring at a human being.
"Thank you," the man gasped. "At last, I'm free."
Roger knelt down. "What happened here?" The man panted with his last breaths. He gathered enough strength to raise his arm and point to the area beyond the arboretum.
"Entire colony. Mutated. Bad soup. Secret path over the ridge."
His arm fell down lamely, and his head lost control of itself and tilted to a resting place. He was dead.